The drive from Randy's lab was atypically uneventful, for which I was grateful. Traffic on the ground was light, most of it's in the air these days, thanks to the preponderance of personal hovercrafts, and I made it to the Excel headquarters with a few minutes to spare. I pulled into the secure parking area and stared at the Excel corporate edifice with a strange mixture of awe and bewilderment. Incredible. Not every company would think of importing an entire castle from the Divided Kingdom for their headquarters.
Few companies could afford it.
If they just lose that giant rotating Excel hologram above the parapet, I'd swear that we just pop back in time 1,000 years.
Oh, yes. Except for the multitude of satellite receivers along the north wall, the hoverport over the main courtyard, and the 2021st century architectural details and improvements made to the front section alone. The illusion is very convincing.
Nah, you're no fun, Harv. It may be a bit ostentatious, but it's got more class than those boring boxes downtown.
That may be true, but your anachronistic tastes can hardly be considered mainstream.
I'll take that as a compliment.
If you wish. In any event, I suggest you hurry. Miss Starr's computer informs me that its mistress hates to be kept waiting.
I got out of the car and started down the finely manicured path toward the building. The scent on the breeze told me that the flowers peppering the grounds were the real thing, as opposed to holographic projections of the new improved plastic replicas which are so common today. It was clear that a lot of effort had gone into making this path seem natural, soft, and non-threatening. It was perfect in every respect, and that scared me. The plants and the dirt were real enough, but they all fit too perfectly into some preordained idea of what nature should look like. There was no oddity or deviation to its patterns and structures. It was trying so hard to be perfectly natural that it was somehow totally unnatural. A Stepford garden. Before I could dwell too deeply on the ambiguity of my thoughts, I entered the security checkpoint at the building's entrance. It was sparsely decorated and pretty much what you would expect to find outside the command center of a paramilitary complex. 10 burly security agents packing heavy ordnance were stationed in pairs on the perimeter. 3 class AAA guard bots with multiple arm extensions, we're talking serious firepower here, stood at the ready as well. 2 in the back of the room, 1 in front near the door. There was a bioscanner near the entrance and a teleport pad at the room's far wall. This pretty much negated the warm fuzziness of the garden path outside. Cold and sterile, there were no illusions of softness here. Even the terminally dim-witted would quickly discern the message being sent. No one gets in to see BB Star without our permission. And it just so happened that one unlucky man was learning this lesson at that exact nano. He was a trim Latino man with a mini handlebar mustache. He reminded me of that used hovercraft salesman from HV. Smooth, suave, and staggeringly good-looking. But there was something about him that you just couldn't trust.
I demand to see her now!
I'm sorry, sir, but Miss Starr has left rather specific orders that you are not to be allowed inside. If you attempt to get past me, I am instructed to shoot you and make it look like an accident.
Oh, sod off, you imbecile!
The Latino guy looked up at the ceiling.
You can hear me, can't you? I know you can hear me, you icy harlot! How the blazes do you expect me to live properly on a measly 3 million credit severance package?
Who's the Joker, Harv? Harv responded through the wrist interface.
That's Manuel Mani, BB Star's former personal astrologer and rumored ex-lover.
I think we can nix the rumored part.
Yes, that is my opinion as well.
Ms. Star does not personally monitor this room, sir. Furthermore, the severance package is based on the standard scale that has been devised for Ms. Star's former, companions. Now please, move along.
The security agent put his hand on the blaster in his holster in a subtle yet effective threat. Manny may have been stubborn, but he wasn't stupid.
You'll be sorry. Believe me, you'll be bloody sorry. Especially you, you trillionaire temptress!
He turned toward the door in an attempt to make a dramatic exit, but unfortunately bumped right into me as he did so.
Get out of my way, you cretin!
My pleasure.
Who are you? Next in line for BB Star?
What's it to you?
Well, you're in for a world of trouble, mate.
He bumped me again with his shoulder on his way out. The guy was much stronger than he appeared.
A world of trouble!
Well, there's a good omen. I straightened my coat and turned back to the agent and the guard bot as they turned their attention toward me.
Good day, Mr. Johnson. Miss Starr is expecting you. This bot will take your firearm and computer interface now.
The guard bot held out a claw, waiting impatiently for me to comply. I smiled at it, but the screen that served as its face remained stoic. I popped my gun from its wrist holder and into my hand. I gently placed the trigger loop on the bottom claw of the bot's arm and let it dangle there like a .4500 caliber holiday ornament.
Well,
the bot extended its second claw so close to my face that if I'd wanted to, I could have shaved with it. Or cut my throat.
Your computer interface, please.
How I know what time it is without my interface? The bot's blank screen remained exactly that.
I'm sorry. Your time is not important to Ms. Starr. Now, please cooperate. It will jeopardize our efficiency bonus if you are tardy.
I thought about questioning his use of the word tardy, but I decided there would be nothing to gain from it. Also, it's never a good idea to mess with a guy's efficiency bonus, and even worse to mess with 10 guys' efficiency bonuses, especially when those 10 guys are heavily armed. I slid the wrist interface off my hand and tossed it to the bot. The bot caught the interface, but the display on its OLED screen formed an angry frown.
Just checking your reflexes.
The Harv in my head was now the only one I had.
Step into the scanner, please.
A word about bioscanners. There was a time when security people could use metal detectors and x-rays to successfully scan for weapons. The advent of biologically engineered armaments, however, completely changed the rules of weapons detection. Making certain that a person doesn't have a hand blaster up his sleeve doesn't mean a thing when that same person may be carrying one in his spleen. Disgusting, but often effective. The bioscanner was a product of necessity from the not-so-good old days 30 years ago, and has been modified over the decades. Bioscans are a great way of making sure people and things are exactly what they appear to be. Nobody has ever been able to trick one, until now, I hoped. That is, if Randy was right and my new interface with Harv was as undetectable as he claimed. I stepped into the scanner and felt that annoying tingle I always get as I pass through. The agent monitoring the scanner looked at me.
Is that your original appendix?
Yes, it is.
It's abnormally large.
Yeah, I get a lot of compliments on it.
The agent turned to the leader.
He's clean, although he should add more fiber to his diet.
I stepped clear of the scanner, hopeful that I had successfully met the pre-meeting security requirements. But then I noticed this skinny agent with a weasel face in the far corner of the room, giving me the visual once over. I knew then that the girl was a Psy, and that she was potential trouble. Being blessed with a naturally thick head, I'm not a particularly easy guy to mind probe. And if Randy was right, which he almost always was when it came to most high-tech matters, having Harv directly interfaced with my brain would make it especially hard for a rat girl to get into my head. Still, if she were to pick up even one stray thought about Harv, my cover would be blown. So I wasn't about to take any chances. Years of experience with Psys has taught me a few things about their talents. The ability to peer into someone's mind is an awesome power, but controlling that power is a very delicate art. One slip-up or a lapse in concentration, and you're picking up the subconscious rantings of every id and superego within thinking distance. And all that psychobabble is enough to drive a person insane, suicidal, homicidal, or any combination thereof. So I've devised a few tricks over the years to sort of throw Psys off balance. And like many things in this world, the most effective is also the most simple. Psys hate humming. Yeah, nothing throws off a Psy's concentration more than when the focus of her mind probe starts humming an insipid yet catchy tune. I found that theme songs of old Holovision shows worked the best. Apparently, the humming creates a type of mental white noise on the mind probe frequency that drowns out any thoughts worth reading. Also, since most people associate such songs with strong visual images, such as personal recollections of their childhood, interpretations of the lyrics, or simple subliminal-level devil-worshipping thoughts, the mind soon becomes even more cluttered, and the Psy is overwhelmed by the tsunami of near-impenetrable mental spam. So, like a gunfighter of old, I locked eyes with Rat Girl and gave her an icy stare as she scoped me out intently. She realized then that I was onto her, so she cast aside all subtleties and pretenses and came at me with a full frontal mind probe. So I started humming.
Ah!
Rat Girl's expression turned sour. The veins in her forehead bulged, and sweat began to bead on her brow. She doubled her efforts, but I would not relent. Her face grew pale, and I noticed that her right hand began to quiver ever so slightly. And that was all she could stand.
He's clean! He's clean!
And she fell to the ground, holding her head.
Fire me!
That, completes our security tests, Mr. Johnson. If you'll kindly step onto the pad, I'll inform Ms. Starr that she may port you up at her convenience.
He gently ushered me away from his fallen comrade and gestured like a paramilitary game show host unveiling the grand prize towards a teleport pad that was against the far wall. And I'll be sure to convey to Miss Starr the level of courtesy and professionalism that you all displayed.
Whatever.
As I stepped onto the teleport pad, I couldn't help thinking that one of the few things I hated more than being bioscanned or mind-probed was being teleported. Porting is bad enough when you have to go from city to city. That at least serves a purpose. Porting from one room to another within the same building, even a building as large as this one, I consider to be either obscenely extravagant, or in this case, obsessively paranoid. A floating bot camera hovered beside me, probably transmitting my image directly back to BB Starr. It was clear she took no chances when it came to security, and I couldn't help but wonder what it was exactly that had this woman so worried. I materialized into BB Starr's office and immediately checked myself out to make certain that everything was where it should be. There are a lot of urban myths about materialization accidents that people like to tell. My favorite is the one about the guy who sneezed during the port and materialized with his face on his lower back. Talk about meeting your end. I seemed intact this time, and I subconsciously breathed a sigh of relief as I checked out my surroundings. As I've stated before, I am not one who is easily impressed, but I have to admit that the sight of BB Starr's digs made my jaw drop like a politician's approval rating at tax time. Larger than most houses, and more than a few football stadiums, the office went beyond plush, way past gaudy, and right to the doesn't-that-break-the-laws-of-physics end of the scale. It was a classic case of big business mind games, psychological intimidation through ostentation. They show you the beautiful garden path to put you at ease, the paramilitary guard post to put a scare into you, and finally, the unbelievably large office to make your jaw drop. The entire place was designed so that by the time you got to BB Starr's desk, whatever strategy or mental agenda you had planned for the meeting was long forgotten, replaced by an overwhelming sense of awe at the sheer majesty of the surroundings. I hate to admit, it was a pretty effective scheme. Without the aid of a telescope, I could just barely see BB Starr sitting calmly at her desk on the far side of the prefabricated river that ran through the office. I told you it was big. Stupid Ape, the thug who had attacked me at my office earlier in the day, rolled up to me in a low-powered hover.
I'm here to drive you to Miss Starr's desk.
No thanks. I never take rides from strangers, thugs who tried to kill me, or people with poor personal hygiene. Congratulations, by the way, on being the first person to qualify in all three categories.
Thanks.
Tell Miss Starr that I'll walk, thank you. How many time zones away is she?
Huh?
Never mind.
Hey, what do you mean, poor personal hygiene?
Good thugs must be seriously hard to find these days. I walked the roughly half-k distance to the river that separated BB Starr from the rest of the office. The great lady sat at her desk on the other side, working intently on something and never bothering to look up. Her entire desktop was a full-screen computer with a dozen windows showing everything from today's stock prices to solar radiation patterns. I wasn't surprised to see Fuzzface and Man Mountain standing behind her. If my landlord, tax officer, and date from the senior prom had been there, we could have had an official meeting of the I Tried to Kill Zach Club. A smaller man in a suit stood behind her as well. This guy worried me a bit. He didn't seem dangerous or anything. I was just having a natural fear of small men in suits.
Ah, good afternoon, Mr. Johnson. How nice of you to come on such short notice. Bridge!
A bridge across the river materialized from the air around me. I have to admit I was intrigued by your offer.
Chair. Please, make yourself comfortable.
Nice office.
You think so? A lot of people find it a bit much.
I can understand that. Frankly, a bit much doesn't do it justice.
How about far, far too much for any sane person to consider, let alone actually build?
That's a little closer.
That is how the editor of 21st Century Architecture described it in his review 5 years ago. 2 months later, I purchased his magazine through a dummy corporation, changed the editorial direction to Arts and Crafts, and put that editor in charge of the potholder design column.
So, like I said, nice office.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Or can I call you Zach?
Feel free.
Excellent. Then please feel free to call me BB. No other living person does at the Nano, so you can be the first. Now, can I get you anything? Coffee, tea, or would you prefer straight caffeine?
A new office door would be nice.
Yes, of course. That will be taken care of by the time you return to your office. Thank you for your understanding.
And I guess the only other thing that I can ask for right now is some information as to what this is all about. She sat back in her chair and spun away from me slowly.
I have a problem, Zach. A problem that calls for your unique services.
People don't call me unless they have a problem, Miss Starr. I mean, BB. Or unless they want me to cause a problem for someone else.
I see.
Some people call me thinking that they have a problem when they really don't. Still other people call me thinking that they don't have a problem when in fact they do.
Okay.
There are also people who call me because they have a problem with a problem that I previously solved for them. And there are a few people who call me about problems they have with my bill.
That is very nice, Zach.
I should have stopped after that first part, huh?
That would have been best.
Well, the bottom line here, BB, is that whenever people call me, a problem usually figures somewhere into the equation.
I think we have established that. This particular matter is one which must be handled by an outside source. A well-paid, discreet outside source. This will not be something for your memoirs or your digital comic book.
For the proper amount of compensation, I can live with that. With that, the small man in the suit leapt to his feet, zipped quickly around the big desk, and thrust a computer pad and virtual pen in front of my face.
Please sign to that!
You're a greeting card salesman, I presume. The guy backed up ever so slightly, a bit of fear on his face.
Why do you ask?
Don't worry, I'm unarmed. A brief bit of history here. 2035 was a seminal year in the annals of law and order. The number of practicing lawyers in the world had been increasing at an alarming rate since the turn of the century. As a result, by 2027, fully 10% of the world's population were lawyers. Subsequently, 9.9998% of the world's population were crooked lawyers. The enormous amount of litigation these lawyers created simply overwhelmed the world's court system. They were suing corporations, they were suing small businesses, they were suing executives, subcontractors, and day workers, municipalities, organizations, and homeowners. Only the homeless and indigent were spared from the litigious siege, and only because they had no money to lose. Some lawyers even specialized in suing the dead. They were easy targets, after all. They always knew where to deliver the subpoena. By 2035, the courts were tied up in so much ridiculous litigation that there was simply no room in the system for any real legal work to be done. The United States Supreme Court, for instance, had to expand their roster of judges from 12 to 120 in order to keep up with the increased caseload. Sadly, however, there was an annual suicide rate among the justices of 25%. When you're in for life, there's only one way out. The legal world was quite simply a powder keg ready to explode. The match that lit the fuse was the infamous case of Rinduli v. Rinduli, St. Louis, Missouri, 2035, in which 12-year-old Elizabeth Rinduli sued her parents for making her ugly. Her suit contended that her parents, Benjamin and Juanita Rinduli, were ugly people. The term used in the suit was beauty challenged, and were therefore responsible for the ugliness of their daughter. Furthermore, the suit asserted that the Rindulis had prior knowledge of their ugliness before Elizabeth's conception, and their procreation showed a reckless disregard for her well-being. Elizabeth sued for punitive damages. The exact amount has been lost in the annals of history, but it is well known that her parents were extremely wealthy. After they had been awarded a sizable settlement earlier that year from a fast food company when Benjamin spilled an iced coffee that was negligently chilled to too cold a temperature onto his lap while going through the hover-through. Apparently, the 3 degree above Kelvin mocha latte froze his genitalia in a particularly embarrassing position. Elizabeth Rinduli won the case, and the world went crazy. Or maybe they finally regained their sanity. The poor girl broke down on the courthouse steps and confessed to the world that she never wanted to pursue litigation, and never even considered herself ugly until her lawyer approached her and convinced her that she was. That's when the revolt began. The public had had enough and set out to rid itself of the litigious epidemic. The outcry became Shakespeare's immortal quote, "The first thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers." And for most people, it was the only line of Shakespeare that they ever really understood. The World Council stopped short of actually killing all the lawyers. They instead formed a series of focus groups that eventually decided that the optimal number of lawyers on a world of 15 billion people would be 7,777. So, through a series of aptitude tests, coin tosses, and popular votes, the 7,777 lawyers deemed most worthy got to remain lawyers. The rest were disbarred and forced to get real jobs. Many became game and talk show hosts. The number of lawyers allowed to practice on the planet has been kept at a nice safe level of 7777 ever since. It's worth noting that some people, like me, think the number of lawyers left in the world is still too high. Case in point, some of the sleazier lawyers who didn't make the 7777 cut, yet weren't ready to give up their litigious lifestyle, simply went underground, slid back into the shadows, and began doing their work undercover. Thousands of these dark sharks are now employed by corporations, such as Excel, under the job title of greeting card salesman. So the sleaze is still out there. It just goes by a different name. I don't sign anything until I know who or what I'm dealing with.
You are as smart as they say.
I'm smarter, actually. I just don't let people know that unless they're paying for my services.
I know this is out of the ordinary, Zach, but this meeting ends now unless you sign.
Fine. I grabbed the computer pad and stylus from the little ex-lawyer. It's worth signing just to find out what it is that you're so desperately trying to keep quiet.
Signature confirmed.
All right, BB. The meter's running, so don't waste my time with any more games. What's this about?
I need you to find something.
I hope you're going to be a little more specific.
Computer, Holovid, BB2.
The lights on her desk glowed brighter. BB turned to me, and it was clear that she didn't like saying this aloud.
This is what I need you to find.
The playback system activated, and the holographic life-sized image of a woman appeared on the desk between us. But it wasn't just any woman. It was BB herself. Is she your clone?
If only it were that simple. Its name is BB2, for obvious reasons, and it is a droid.
You're aware, of course, that it's a capital offense to construct a droid with human skin tones.
Hence my great need for secrecy.
Is she, I don't know, some sort of homage to yourself?
It was meant to be used as a spy.
An android spy that looks exactly like you. And you thought that this would be effective? That maybe your competitors would give trade secrets away to someone who they thought was you?
This was a project created by my late husband. I was completely unaware of it until after his death. Imagine my surprise.
I had to admit, this was certainly shaping up to be worth the price of admission. Why don't we start at the beginning?
B.S. Starr was a very rich and very eccentric man, as you are no doubt aware. He originally designed the droid for purposes of industrial espionage. A beautiful woman, after all, is told many more secrets than a man. However, sometime after B.S. and I had married, he decided to change the specs.
Engineers hate it when that happens.
B.S. decided that the droid should be a copy of me. An improved copy. He secretly recorded my brain patterns while I was sleeping in order to give the droid my personality, or at least the aspects of my personality of which he approved. He was planning to replace me. Why not? He had the money and the power. He wanted to have his beautiful blonde trophy at his side. He wanted her to obey his every whim and fulfill his every desire. He just didn't want her to think for herself. So he built the cybernetic bimbo, and just to give it some multitasking abilities, he also had it designed to serve as his personal bodyguard. The perfect trophy wife, the perfect weapon. It was all he had ever wanted.
So she...
It.
So it isn't your average android?
Hardly. To begin with, it has a plutonium core.
A nuclear-powered android. Oh, good.
My late husband had a tendency to overdo things. He was rich and powerful, and he wanted the entire universe to know it, even when he was spending credits on something very few beings would or could ever know about.
Exactly how powerful is it?
Computer, BB2 specs.
The hologram of the android split lengthwise down the middle to reveal its anatomy. Computer-generated arrows appeared, pointing to various features and add-ons.
BB-2 is constructed from an artificial carbon alloy simulating external human body parts to a level indistinguishable from the original by all but the most sophisticated detection technology. The plutonium core powers advanced cybernetic and bionic internal mechanisms, making the unit approximately 150 times stronger and 176 times more durable than organic carbon-based human beings. This measurement is based on a calculation derived from a core sampling of 1,000 humans.
Computer, just cut to the chase.
I do not understand the command.
Just the facts. I don't need to know how you came up with them.
As you wish. The unit's reflexes are 200 times faster than those of a normal human. Its senses are far more extensive as well. Visual sense spans the entire light spectrum. Olfactory sense can detect and analyze airborne substances as minute as 0.001 microns. Auditory sensors can detect sounds as faint as 0.001 decibels.
Now, this just gets better and better.
The unit also has the ability, through auditory and visual stimulation, to psionically dominate the minds of humans, even those possessing natural psionic abilities.
I get the point. You don't want to make her... it mad.
It is a weapon, but at its core, the droid is also a computer. Its central processing unit is experimental and very advanced. It also possesses extensive and extendable databases in its memory. It has information on everything from the gross profits of all the corporations to a list of all Excel employees, past and present.
Which is why you can't send any of your own people directly after her. It.
It would identify them and possibly kill them instantly.
What about me? Being a pseudo-famous person, I'm bound to attract its attention if I get close. It might connect me to you.
True. But I think it will consider several other possibilities for your existence before it comes to the conclusion that you are working for me. Therefore, you will have a window of opportunity in which to capture it.
What if word leaks out that I was here?
I have taken care of that already.
Why doesn't that make me feel better?
Forgive me, Zack, but at these prices, I think you can stand a little discomfort.
When did it escape?
2 weeks ago. It broke free of its internment cell, put 2 security guards into intensive care, destroyed a guard bot, and reduced the minds of 2 of my most expensive scientists to infant level.
It's been loose for 2 weeks? It could be anywhere by now.
I considered this to be an Excel matter. I had hoped that we could handle it internally. I was wrong. This droid is an angry and bitter machine, Zack. I have no idea what it wants, where it is going, or what it is planning. But it will not hesitate to kill anyone who stands in its way. And there is no telling the extent of the damage it will do if it is not stopped. Our profilers tell me that if it gets angry or severely agitated, it could turn psychotic and go on a killing spree.
And an android like that could kill hundreds of people before it was stopped.
Not to mention the trillions in lawsuits that Excel would be facing.
Yeah, you're all heart. Just for the record, if this thing gets to that level, I'm calling in the authorities.
If you do, Zack, then I assure you that I will ruin your life in every possible manner.
You do whatever you need to, BB. I'm not about to let innocent people die just to keep your dirty secret.
Let us hope then, Zack, for both our sakes, that the situation never comes to that.
Right. My computer and I are going to need complete access to your records.
The greeting card salesman became a little nervous at this and whispered something into BB's ear.
I suggest that you give him
We will give you fairly complete access.
In that case, I'll give you fairly complete service.
All right, you will have complete access. However, if news of this matter finds its way into the press, Excel will sue you for more than you could ever dream of being worth. Your descendants will be paying me until the turn of the next millennium.
Fair enough. Just then, my vision became blurry, and my head started to spin. I saw letters appear in my head. And I knew that Harv was making his presence known. It took me a second or two to figure out what he meant, but I was grateful that he was there. Does BB-2 have morphing ability?
What?
The greeting card salesman again whispered into BB's ear.
It has limited morphing abilities, an ability left over from its original industrial espionage spec. It can change its facial features and hair color to a certain degree. Although I sincerely doubt it would ever change its hair color. I love being a blonde.
Is it safe to assume, then, that it still resembles you?
What?
This was really starting to annoy me.
Yes, that is safe to assume.
What happens when I find it?
I would prefer that it be kept intact. BB-2 represents a major investment for this company. I would like to recoup that investment by dismantling the droid and selling it for parts.
Just as well. I'm not fond of killing things, even things that aren't technically alive. But I take it that you have something else in mind then? A weakness or a flaw I can exploit? The greeting card salesman handed me a round, wafer-thin chip, barely the size of an old-fashioned quarter. I'm hoping that this is something really special.
It's a neuroneutralizer. I was a robotics major as an undergrad. The NN is attuned to BB-2's electronic brain pattern. Stick that on the droid's body and it will be helpless.
My guess is that this will be easier said than done.
Services that cost 25,000 credits a day usually are. So, Zach, do we have a deal?
I'll need to review BB-2's background, and I'd like a copy of the specs to be downloaded to my computer.
Agreed. I will make sure your computer has access to all it needs.
Then we're set.
You will report in hourly?
I will report in when I have something to report. Or I need something from you.
Very well. Good day, Mr. Johnson.
Numerous questions churned in my gray matter as I stood on the teleport pad. It was clear that BB wasn't telling me the whole truth, but I figured that the truth would come out in the end. It was also clear that for all her coolness and bravado, BB was scared, or at least as scared as BB gets, and her fear went way beyond the threat of potential litigation. It occurred to me then that perhaps she feared that BB-2 might actually be coming after her. It made sense, after all, since the droid was originally designed to replace her, and if that were the case, I couldn't blame BB for being frightened. The droid certainly had the firepower to take out its role model. It was up to me to make sure that didn't happen. After all, dead clients don't give referrals, and they look really bad on a resume. It was late in the day when I left BB's and headed home for the evening in the hopes that I could formulate a plan of action in relative comfort. My home is a modest turn-of-the-21st-century split ranch, comfortable, homey, and inconspicuous by design. The nature of my work inevitably makes me more than my share of enemies, so I figure it's a good idea to have a home that's difficult for Joe Average Thug to identify. And although it may look mundane on the outside, Randy and I have made a few modifications to the structure and the computer security system that makes it more fortress-like than meets the eye. As I pulled into my driveway, a familiar-looking hover at the curb caught my attention. It was distinct in design, retro-sculpted to look like a 100-year-old Chevy, only with jet boosters instead of wheels. It was a clear and obvious sign of trouble. Admittedly, though, you really had to admire the stylish way in which the trouble was presented. Gates, this is all I need. Art, check out the hover at the curb.
I noticed it on the satellite navigation as we were approaching. I had hoped it was coincidence. Shall I check the ownership to be certain?
You can if you like, but we already know who it is.
Whoop.
Whoop. Remember a while back when I was describing the current state of the private investigation business? I mentioned a company called Digco. Well, this is them, up close and personal. Sidney Whoop is one of their A-list operatives. He handles tough cases, has dramatic adventures, and looks good on camera. Tall, solid build, chiseled chin, chestnut hair, steely blue eyes, yada yada yada, you know the type. What more could you want in a dick? Other than a conscience, some compassion, and a fully operational moral compass, that is. Truthfully, Sidney has the makings of a good private eye. He has good instincts, a clever mind, and he's tough enough to handle the kind of trouble that PIs inevitably get into. Unfortunately, he has what I consider to be a sloppy work ethic. Couple that with his uncontrollable desire for the type of elegant lifestyle that's not easily affordable, and you have the perfect candidate for the Digco ranks. Sidney is among the cream of their cesspool. Remember also I mentioned that the good Digco operatives get and ones to better cover their adventures? Well, Sidney has two. I call them and a one and a two, but no one ever gets that joke. And a one is an annoying little man who, aside from having this troublesome habit of drawing his gun in response to peer pressure, is harmless enough and is content to stay in Sidney's shadow. And a two, on the other hand, is a bit of a hothead. My guess is that he's uncomfortable in his junior role and really wants to go solo. He has almost everything still to learn about the business, but try telling that to him. Sidney and I have worked opposite sides of the same case a few times before. He's gotten the better of me on more than one occasion. I don't like him, I don't appreciate what he does, and I don't respect him. I do, however, respect the threat that he poses. I cast a quick glance at the hover as I turned off my car, and sure enough, I spotted all three of the Whoop team inside.
Should I net the NFPD?
And what, have them picked up for loitering? Nah, let's play it cool and see what they want.
Well, my advice, although I'm certain that you'll ignore it, is to exercise extreme caution.
When am I ever not careful?
Should I list the examples from the past week, or are you in a hurry?
I got out of the car and walked calmly toward my house, trying hard to ignore Whoop and his thugs. I wanted to let them make the first move. First moves don't matter much in my line of work. In this game, as in most, it's the last move that counts. There are times, of course, when the first move is also the last move, but I didn't really want to think about that right then. Anyway, it didn't take long for Whoop to move. He and his posse got out of the hover and, hands neatly clutching the blaster-sized bulges in their jackets, walked briskly toward me.
Zach Johnson, long time no see, old man.
Why, if it isn't Whoop the Snoop. How are things in Dickville?
You mean Ditko.
Not really. Listen, I'd invite you and the boys in for tea, but I'm out of scones. You should give me a little warning before dropping by.
So, I hear you paid a little visit to X-Shell today.
You're keeping tabs on me now, Sydney? I didn't know business was that slow.
You're big news, Zach. Didn't you know that? You're in the public eye.
Yeah, well, I needed to get my toaster recalibrated. X-Shell headquarters was the nearest service center.
Listen, Zach, let's just cut to the chase here, okay? We know that X-Shell hired you today.
You do?
Of course. You're the best PI in the business. Who else would they hire to find the you-know-what?
How do you know they want me to find...
Something as vital as this. You're the only man alive who can find it and bring it back to them.
What? You mean you know about the vibranium enema?
Of course we do. We've known about the vibranium enema for months now. We just... Damn.
That's okay, boss. We can edit that out.
Oh, shut up. You're right, Zach. I don't know what it is they had you to find. Frankly, I don't care, but our client does. So here's the deal. Whatever it is that X-Shell's paying you to find, we'll pay you double.
That's a lot of money, Sydney.
Enough to set you up for a long time, I'd imagine.
And you have no idea what it is I'm looking for.
We don't care. But whatever X-Shell wants, our client wants more.
You mean H-Tech?
Zach, you know I'm not one to kiss and tell.
Okay. So you'll pay me you don't know how much for something you don't know what it is and give it to someone you refuse to name.
Clean and easy.
Not to mention illegal, immoral, and dishonest.
I knew you were going to bring that up. What is this fixation you have with being legal, moral, and honest?
Call it a character flaw. Sorry, Sydney. No deal.
I did my best, Zach. I tried to be fair and cut you in on this action. I want to go on record with that.
I'll be sure to put it in my diary tonight. Antoine had moved beside me and was now facing Sydney to capture the action from the best possible angle.
Then we'll get it without you.
It might be a little tough, what with you not knowing what it is and all.
Don't worry about that, Zach. We're very good at what we do. We offered you a shot at the brass ring and you turned your back. You've drawn your line in the sand, so here's a word of advice. Stay out of our way, or we'll squash you like a bug.
Sydney, look, if you're going to talk that way for the cameras, at least keep your metaphors consistent.
Have it your way, Zach.
And a one lingered to make sure he properly recorded Sydney's dramatic walk into the sunset. And a two, however, just stared at me, making no move to follow his paws. And I could tell by the look on his face that he was feeling his oats.
Two things, Mr. Johnson. One is that you should never cross Ditko. And two, you're not as funny in person as you are in the net.
He tightened his grip on the bulge in his jacket.
Maybe you shouldn't travel without your writers.
And a one saw his counterpart taking a stand, and as I feared, out of a sheer peer pressure reflex, moved beside him and eased his hand toward his own weapon. I knew then that this was about to turn ugly. But at that nano, Har flashed a message into my head.
It's ours.
I felt a little dizzy as the letters first appeared, but I don't think the thugs in front of me noticed. They did, however, notice me smiling after I read the message.
Okay, Sonny, here's a checklist for you. One, I save my good material for people who can understand it.
Sydney finally realized that he was no longer the star of the show and turned around.
Two, you and the rest of your Ditko conglomerate can kiss my rosy red rectum.
Attitu pulled his gun, but I was already on him. I grabbed his gun hand with my fist and gave him a smash to the face with my forearm. Gah!
And three, I don't use writers.
Sydney was running up the path toward Anda-1, flapping his arms like an angry duck.
Stop! Stop right now or you're fired!
But Anda-1 was too full of adrenaline to listen. He drew a bead on me as I stood over his counterpart. Gah! I dove to my side onto the lawn, popping my gun into my hand as I rolled.
Electra, now!
An energy bolt knocked the blaster out of Anditu's hand. Sydney stopped dead in his tracks.
Now we're in trouble.
All four of us turned to see Electra emerge from the house in her full Latina glory, smoking energy cannon in hand. Personally, I find Electra very attractive with a smoking weapon in her hands, but I'm not exactly sure what this says about my psyche.
I thought we agreed, mi amor. No more fighting on the lawn.
We're not fighting. It's just a long emotional goodbye. Isn't that right, Sydney?
Absolutely! And it's always nice to see you, Dr. Gavada.
And you're as annoying as ever, Sydney.
Electra spotted Anditu sitting up and reaching for his blaster. Another burst from her energy cannon vaporized some of the material from the inseam of his pants. He froze immediately and put his hands in the air.
Only slightly less annoying than your compadres.
You could tell from the look on Anditu's face that he really wanted to take a quick inventory of his lower regions.
I think you should be leaving now.
I'd listen to her if I were you. You really don't want to see her when she's angry.
Get in the car, you morons.
This time, they both did as they were told. Sydney politely tipped his hat to Electra and turned to me.
I apologize for the boys. It's hard to get good help these days. Our offer still stands, by the way.
And the answer is still no.
And I guess the threat still stands as well. But let me know if you change your mind.
He turned and joined into one in the still bleeding end of two in the hovercraft. And then they were gone. Honey, I'm home.
I noticed.
Electra put the energy cannon back into the entryway, and I jogged up the steps and kissed her happily on the lips. Mwah! Thanks for the help. It's nice to know that my woman packs a little heat.
Well, you know what I always say. Nobody beats on my man except me.
Electra's kick sent me to the ground.
You're lucky I love you, Chico.
Then she stormed off toward her old BMW hover and left in a cloud of dust. I watched from the ground as the hover flew out of sight. Then Harv's hologram appeared before me, projected from my wrist interface.
Well, that was unexpected.
Am I wearing a kick me, punch me, shoot me sign?
Only in a metaphorical sense. I must say, though, Dr. Gavada has remained in remarkably fine fighting form since retiring from professional kickboxing.
Yeah. Lucky me. I rubbed my chin as I staggered toward the house. Do you have any idea what that was about?
What does your keen human intuition tell you?
That there's something you're not telling me, Harv.
There are hundreds of thousands of things that I'm not telling you. I suggest that you tune into Entertainment This Nano. I'm sure you'll deduce the cause of Dr. Gavada's anger.
Oh, heck me. I examined the wreckage that was once my living room. Attacked by 7 different people in one day. I think that's a new personal record.
And the day isn't over yet.
One thing I need to make clear at this point is that I am deeply in love with Dr. Electra Gavada. She's the most brilliant, wonderful, beautiful woman on Earth and all known planets, and I consider myself the luckiest PI in the universe to have her as my fiancé. That said, I must also tell you that Electra has a somewhat fiery temper. Maybe fiery is not the right word here. Explosive is somewhat closer. Volcanic is good. Nuclear is probably the closest, but I'm sure you get the point by now. So with that said, you'll understand when I say that I wasn't surprised upon entering my house to find that it had been trashed. Electra had vented a tiny portion of her rage upon my humble furnishings. The result was almost total devastation. My original Twinson artificial leather couch had been overturned, but otherwise looked to be in one piece. My 2 antique simulated wood tables weren't so lucky. Chairs had been overturned and or snapped in two, and the wall, yes, the wall opposite the computer terminals, had more than a few electricized cracks and dents in it. I considered myself lucky, though, because she had left my 3 most prized antiques intact. My 1969 Mets poster, printed on real paper, my original Star Wars motion picture poster, also on real paper, and my lava lamp, containing no real lava. The posters hung neatly on the wall, and the lamp bubbled away as if it didn't have a care in the world. Because of this, I knew that, although Electra was clearly angry with me, she wasn't really, really angry with me. I stepped through the rubble and walked toward the computer HV screen, which covers the far wall. Entertainment This Nano.
Top story this half hour is the Lightspeed love affair between B.B. Starr, the ex-exotic dancer and current trillionaire, and Private Eye Zachary Nixon Johnson.
Oh, boy.
A high-placed source who wished to remain nameless has just confirmed the rumor that began circulating 23 minutes ago.
A new view window zoomed open, this one showing a swarm of press bots huddled around a tiny little man in a suit. I could tell, even through the identity-hiding distortion effect over his face, that this was the greeting card salesman that I'd met in BB's office that afternoon.
As I mentioned, Zachary Johnson met with Ms. Starr today, and just between us, the purpose of his visit was for meaningless sex.
What?
Excuse me, unnamed source. Bill Gibbon III from Entertainment This Nano. What do you mean exactly by meaningless?
Meaningless. Without meaning, significance, or value. Purposeless. Is that clear enough for you, Mr. Baboon?
That's Gibbon.
Whatever.
Will the two of them continue the meaningless sex?
Just between us, I'd say no. It was most likely a one-time thing. BB Star bores easily.
So there you have it. The last private eye on the planet, caught in BB Star's icy hit-and-run of love. More news on this as the rumor develops. Now let's...
Off!
Don't shoot me! I'm just the messenger!
I looked back at the HV screen. Sorry. It was obvious that Harv had been coaching the appliances again. Which was annoying, but I had more pressing problems.
I'm lucky Electra didn't gut me like a fish. Harv, remind me when the case is over to have BB issue a retraction.
Harv popped into the wall next to the computer screen.
I most certainly will, provided that you survive. And what of Dr. Guevara?
I can't contact her now without endangering my cover. She's just gonna have to trust me on this one. Once this is over and BB issues her retraction, I'm sure I'll be fine. Besides, with Electra, it's best to let her cool off some before approaching.
You're scared of her?
Of course I am. I'm not stupid.
I went into the bathroom, which thankfully was still intact. Whirlpool. The tub sprang to simulated life at my command. I removed my clothing and sank into the tub.
Ugh. Harv, put up the new screen, please. And while I'm soaking, see what you can dig up on BB2 for me.
The latest headlines vibrantly appeared on the bathroom wall computer screen, but before I could begin to read any of them, Harv's face popped back into view.
I've acquired some information and video footage that you might want to review.
That was fast.
I am the best at what I do.
Very modest about it, too.
Do you want the information or not?
Fine, let's hear it.
Harv's face was replaced with a still image of a middle-aged man. He was salt and pepper-haired, thin and pale in the face, and had big eyes that were slightly distorted by thick-rimmed eyeglasses.
Are those actual prescription glasses?
It appears so.
I didn't think anybody wore those anymore.
Fashion judgments aside, Eggshell is currently putting a substantial amount of capital and manpower into the search for this man, Dr. Benjamin Pierce.
I guess it's important to BB to have a good physician.
His doctoral degree is in physics, robotics, computer science, and 17 other non-medical disciplines. He is world famous for his nanochip design and for its use in the creation of artificial intelligence. He was also the lead designer on the BB2 project.
Oh yeah, he'd be a good person to talk to.
Apparently Eggshell agrees with you. They just haven't been able to locate him since he left the project 11 months ago.
Have they tried the golf course simulator?
Actually, that was the first place they looked.
So he just disappeared?
Rather unexpectedly and mysteriously.
How suspicious.
And how redundant of you to say so. Next bit of information. I have obtained some video footage of BB2, which you might find interesting.
Let's see it.
The image on the wall screen changed again. This time it was replaced by video footage of a darkly lit military encampment surrounded by a many-leveled wire fence.
These vids are slightly over 1 year old. They were edited together from internal recorders and the Eggshell observation satellite. The Eggshell computer gave them to me somewhat begrudgingly.
How begrudgingly?
No need to worry. You can afford it.
We're supposed to have complete access.
Yes, well, the definition of complete access differs greatly between those granting it and those receiving it.
Can I use that?
No, I copyrighted it. Now, may I kindly proceed with the footage?
Knock yourself out.
I shall take that as an affirmation. This footage was taken somewhere in the province of New Paraguay. The compound is, or rather was, the hideout of a group of revolutionaries who were out to rid the world of all computer technology.
Why do you keep using the past tense here?
As if in answer to my question, BB suddenly appeared from the jungle and moved stealthily toward the compound.
Is that BB or the droid?
Watch.
On screen, BB grabbed the fence and was immediately hit with a massive jolt of electricity. Sparks shot from the fence and her fingertips. BB responded to the electrical attack by ripping the fence apart.
My guess would be the droid.
The fence was state-of-the-art electromagnetic link, laser-sharp and charged with 50,000 volts. It was designed to disable a level 10 battle bot.
BB-2 grabbed the two guards who were unlucky enough to be patrolling the area. She lifted them by their throats, shook them vigorously, and tossed them aside. Their bodies hit the ground like broken dolls. Ouch! Then, two specially trained attack dogs, fangs bared, ran towards BB-2 from within the compound. She turned and met their charge with a stare. The dogs, who were apparently smarter than their human counterparts, instantly knew they were out of their league. They both rolled over onto their backs and put their paws in the air in the universal doggy I give up position. BB-2 gave each of them a calming little pat on the head and moved on. She likes dogs.
Yes, too bad you're not a schnauzer. My conjecture is that she dispersed synthetic pheromones as the dogs approached. Their acute olfactory senses made them especially susceptible.
There was a flash of light, and BB-2 suddenly lurched forward as if she were struck from behind. The video footage cut to a grainier overhead shot, obviously satellite footage, and revealed that she was under attack by a dozen men wielding energy cannons and high-powered projectile ordnance. She paused for a nano and deliberately let the attackers hit her with another burst of fire. Is she smiling?
It's not clear. The quality of the images and the angle of the camera make it difficult to determine.
I swear she's smiling. Gates, that's creepy. BB-2 suddenly dove to the ground and rolled, lightning quick, away from the weapon fire. The attackers tried to keep up, but it was like trying to catch a quicksilver bullet with a butterfly net. And in three heartbeats' time, BB-2 was upon them. See how she bounced around like that instead of going straight at them?
Yes, a waste of movement.
No, she's playing with them. She disarmed the first guard, and with a bit of creative flair, twisted the body of his gun into a balloon animal puppy dog. Definitely playing with them.
Playtime is about to turn a bit graphic, I'm afraid. She makes the next balloon animal out of the guard himself.
Cut, then. I've seen enough. Harv's face replaced the video images on the screen.
The encampment was protected by 36 heavily armed guerrilla soldiers. It took BB-2 less than 6 minutes to raise the entire compound. She even salted the earth afterwards.
And it's our job to stop her. Well, I guess we're gonna have to outsmart her.
I do hope my next human has your sense of humor.
Look, if she was built by humans, then she could be stopped by humans. Besides, I have a weapon that those poor does didn't. That neo-naturalizer.
You mean the neuro-neutralizer?
Whatever. You know, the thing that looks like an old quarter.
Be that as it may, as I recall, Miss Starr neglected to mention that the NN was never actually tested on BB-2.
No, I think I would have remembered that.
According to the X-Shell computer, the device was designed and tested in simulation situations only.
Why am I always the guinea pig when it comes to the actual dangerous part? But Harv wasn't listening. His image disappeared from the computer screen, and his holographic form suddenly appeared beside me.
We have a visitor.
Another computer window zoomed open on the wall screen. It was a live feed from the security camera at the newly repaired front door. A little girl in the green knickers of the Junior Space Scouts, several boxes of cookies cradled in her arms, stood genteelly on the front stoop. We don't really have time for this now, Harv. But what are a few boxes of those peanut butter things and a box of mints?
I don't think so.
You're right, forget the mints.
Do you not think it's odd for a Junior Space Scout to be selling cookies at this time of night?
What are you thinking here?
I'm taking the liberty of performing a heat and energy scan on our visitor.
The two of us watched as the image of the little girl morphed into a 2-meter-high hulking form.
This is her actual body size and mass.
I guess we won't be getting those cookies. How big is she?
It's unclear at this point as to whether or not the pronoun she is accurate. Clearly, our visitor is using a holographic disguise device, but actual height is 2.3 meters. Weight is 153 kilos. Not as big as the larger of BB's henchmen, but still rather large by human standards.
Well, that explains the HDD. I doubt anyone would buy cookies from a Junior Space Scout that size. Unless, of course, she used the hard sell approach.
I sincerely doubt that whatever is at the door is an actual Junior Space Scout.
I get that, Harv. You can't afford a holographic disguise device on a scout's allowance. I got out of the tub and winced a bit as I tried to coax my already sore muscles back into action. Wait for my signal, then let her, him, or whatever it is in. At least this time, we have the element of surprise on our side.
Surprise, as you know, offers little defense against blaster fire.
I stepped into the body dryer.
A nano later, I was dry, dressed, and ready for action.
Let's go.
It was fast becoming one of those days when it just wasn't a lot of fun to be me. Thug attacks, press bots, a highly advanced android killing machine, a jealous girlfriend, and now an ominously hulking figure in little girl drag at my front door. Had a trip to the proctologist and a visit from the World Tax Service, and this would officially be one of the three worst days of my life. I grabbed my gun and headed toward the front door. I pressed myself flat against the wall by the entranceway, gave Harv the signal, and the door popped open. The scout entered, cautiously.
Would anyone like to buy some Junior Space Scout cookies?
I stepped out from behind the door and put the business end of my gun to the back of her head. I was starting to feel real good about this situation, which is actually a really bad thing when you're a PI, because a PI should never feel good about any situation that involves firearms and thugs wearing HDDs. By doing so, I made the classic HDD mistake. I forgot that the actual being underneath the holographic image was far larger than the hologram projection. I did manage to block the holographic Junior Space Scout elbow I thought was aimed at my groin, but the actual real-life elbow, the size of a sledgehammer, made actual real-life contact with my jaw. The force of the blow knocked the gun from my hand and sent me hard into the wall where I slumped to the ground, dazed, confused, and in serious trouble.
I'm gonna break your legs in as many places as humanly possible.
I heard of pushy sales girls, but this is ridiculous.
You're a funny guy, even without your writers.
I wish you'd explain that to my computer. And I don't use writers!
I got fooled by the HDD effect again because, although I blocked the punch that seemed to be aimed at my midsection, my head got rocked back hard from a fist to the nose. I responded by hitting the scout back with a couple of quick jabs to her cherubic face. Neither jab, however, seemed to do any real harm. I could tell that because after the punches, the scout gave me one of those smiles that said, "Is that the best you can do?"
You have no idea how silly I feel right now.
Should you survive, I would advise against using video footage of this incident in your next promotional campaign. It may damage your reputation as a tough guy.
I appreciate your help, Harv.
Actually, I think I can be of assistance here.
The next nano, the lights went out, and the computerized window shades shut tight, plunging the room into total darkness. The attacker hit me again, this time in the stomach, and sent me to the floor.
This is your plan? I still get beaten to a pulp, but I don't have to endure the embarrassment of watching the Junior Space Scout do it?
Just then, Harv flashed the words, "O ye of little faith," before my eyes. This time I recognized them as words rather than just an array of letters to be deciphered. I also noted with some pleasure that his appearance this time made me neither dizzy nor nauseous. The words "switching to night vision" flashed before my eye, and that's when everything fell into place. There was a burst of red light behind my left eye, and the room quickly came into crystal clear infrared focus. Harv was using the interface lens in my eye to scan in the infrared spectrum. The little Junior Space Scout was gone. Instead, I saw before me a giant, red, blurry, thug-like form slowly groping its way through the darkness. I made the most of my advantage and hit the thug twice in the gut with my fists. It was like punching a truck, but I think the thug felt it. I knew I needed to end this quickly, so I went with my old standby, the Dirty Fight 1-2. I saw the thug's red blurry knees buckle, and he, and I can now safely assume that it was a he, staggered. That would be the Dirty One.
Harv, left arm, one and done. Now!
As you wish.
I mentioned earlier that the armor I wear is software to my muscles and allows me to pull some power from its circuits to boost my strength in times of need. I can focus the power in a very general way, and in most cases, that's more than good enough. However, when I need to really juice up a punch and pull every bit of power from the armor that I can, I need Harv. I don't have the concentration during a combat situation to focus on the minutiae of the armor's circuits and its power flow. Harv, on the other hand, lives for minutiae and can perform the transference of power in milliseconds. Sure enough, my left arm began to tingle as I reared back. That is the Dirty Two. The Junior Space Scout fell hard against the wall screen. The screen cracked from the impact, and a rainbow explosion of sparks erupted as the electricity from the screens shorted out the lasers in the scout's HDD. Harv turned the lights back on, and I watched as sparks and holographic images spurted in all directions. The Junior Space Scout morphed chaotically from image to image as the HDD began to short-circuit and randomly spit up every image in its memory. A skinny black musician, a new Portuguese cab driver, a beautiful Japanese geisha. An ugly, hulking, ham-fisted thug with a flat nose. His actual form, I think. And BB Star. What the?
This is only conjecture on my part, but it appears as though your attacker is being electrocuted. And I might remind you that accidental deaths by electrocution are not covered by your homeowner's insurance.
Good point. Fire extinguisher. At my command, flame-smothering foam shot from the ceiling nozzles and smothered both the sparking wall screen and the attacker. I grabbed the attacker's feet and pulled the body free of the area. The attacker's HDD righted itself, returning the image once again to the Cherubic Junior Space Scout. I grabbed my gun from the floor and aimed it at her. Him.
Okay, honey. Who sent you?
I don't talk.
I activated the laser sight on my gun and aimed the red beam directly at the button fly of the little green knickers.
I suggest you reconsider, or you'll be talking like that permanently.
Manuel Manny.
BB's ex-boyfriend?
You're moving in on his woman. No one does that to Manuel Manny and lives.
So he sent a junior space scout to do his dirty work.
He would have come himself, but he doesn't believe in violence.
Very enlightened. First of all, tell Manuel that it's over between BB and me. He has no reason to be jealous. Second of all, it's also over between him and BB, so he should get over it, move on, and get a life. And third, you tell Manuel never to cross me again, because I do believe in violence. I believe in it very strongly, and practice it regularly. Now get out before I give you a demonstration.
The scout quickly adjusted the holographic uniform, then turned tail, and ran as fast as the little scout legs would carry.
Activate security field. If it's not killer androids and thugs, it's jealous ex-boyfriends and thugs. I'm headed for bed. I need some sleep.
But you should be proud of what you've accomplished. You have now officially broken your personal record for the number of attempts on your life in one day.
Thankfully, the morning came without incident. I took a fast, lightwave shower, selected my coolest sleuthing outfit from the wardrobe file, and ran every diagnostic test available on my armor to make certain that it was working properly. With everything that had happened the day before, I didn't want to take any chances. I left the house and went to my car. Go automatic pilot. Let's go to the office.
Check.
The engine fired up, and we pulled onto the clean new Frisco streets. Harv's face popped into a window on the dash.
Okay, old wise carbon one, where do we begin?
It's only logical, my good machine, to begin at the beginning. We start with the man who built BB-2. The honcho of the design team. You know, the guy with the glasses.
If I'm translating the word honcho correctly, then you are referring to Dr. Benjamin Pierce.
That's the one. Let's find him.
And after that?
That's it for now. Let's see where that brings us.
Of course. Why bother having a plan?
I have a plan. It just happens to be a flexible one.
The one flaw, of course, is that Dr. Pierce is currently somewhat difficult to locate at the Nano. As I mentioned, Eggshell has been searching for him for nearly a year, and as I understand it, have had no luck.
Well, that's why they hired me. I have resources and connections.
Such as?
In answer to Harv's question, I touched a speed dial button on the dashboard, and after a nano or two, Tony Rickey's face appeared on the screen. Tony Rickey and I grew up together on the mean streets of the upper-middle-class New Frisco suburbs. It was a lot rougher than it sounds, really. We played cops and robbers as kids, but we fought a lot because we both always wanted to be the cop. Eventually, we switched to baseball, which in the end wasn't much better because we both always wanted to play first base. But that's neither here nor there. Tony was very serious back then when he said he wanted to be a cop. He entered the academy right out of school and has dutifully worked his way through the ranks of the NFPD over the past 10 years. Today, he's a captain. And despite the personal and professional embarrassment that I've caused him through the years, we have remained the best of friends. And of course, he's a great source of information.
Zach, what's wrong now?
Hey, do I need to be in trouble to call my best friend?
No, but that's usually the case. So, why are you calling?
I need your help.
I knew it. You're not in jail again, are you?
Not this time. I'm just doing some legwork on a new case, and I need you to run a name through your files. Dr. Ben Pierce.
Tony stared at me for a bit, then cracked a smile. What's so funny?
Well, this explains that crazy story about you and BB Star on ETN last night. You're working for Eggshell.
What makes you say that?
Eggshell has been leaning on my department for months looking for Ben Pierce. They filed 50 complaints against him this week alone, everything from industrial espionage to stealing office supplies. The only people looking for Ben Pierce these days, you included it seems, are Excel employees.
Okay, you got me. So, what about Pierce?
I'll net what we have to Harv, but it isn't much. Nothing that Excel's task force doesn't already have.
Task force?
Sure. Excel set up a special department devoted solely to locating Pierce and bringing him in. Didn't you know that?
Yeah, sure, the task force. I just thought maybe you'd have something they didn't, that's all.
I wish I did, Zach. And I don't blame you for wanting to stay away from that department. The guy who runs it, Fred Burns, he's a smarmy little putz.
Oh, yeah, Burns, he's the worst. What you gonna do, right? Thanks anyway, Tony.
I'll help you anytime that it's legal, Zach. You know that. Just one more thing.
What's that?
Be careful. Call me if you need a hand, okay?
I appreciate it, Tony. Thanks. Tony's face disappeared from the dash screen, and Harv's image flipped back to full screen. Apparently, there's a task force.
I told you Excel was devoting a lot of effort to finding Dr. Pierce.
You never once used the phrase task force.
Well, forgive me for not using the proper buzzwords to pique your interest. Yes, there's a task force. It operates out of Excel's satellite offices downtown and is run by...
Fred Burns, I know. Thanks for the help. Carr, change of course. We're going to Excel's office downtown. Harv will give you the coordinates. Let's go see if Fred Burns is as much of a putz as Tony says he is.